Just a quick warning that we're going to be talking about, obviously, existentialism, some death, some regret, some sin, some memory fuckery, time stuff, obviously. So if you're just not in the right headspace for that kind of thing, skip these next few episodes. Another episode of A Hopeless Endeavor, a Joanna Newsom podcast. My name is Sam.
My name is Nikki, and welcome to part one of The Things I Say.
Welcome to halfway through the album. We are song 6 of 11. We are smack dab between Waltz and Divers, which is kind of a wild place to be.
It is a wild place to be. And I am not over the fact that it's the halfway point. Yeah. Like, I feel like I'm not ready at all to start doing the second half.
I feel like if I envision this, I feel like Waltz and Divers are both mountains and we're in the valley right now. Mm. Like, we're somewhere in between these two, because I feel like this song is a bit of a reprieve after losing our minds at Waltz and preemptively losing our minds for Divers.
That's true. It is this weird reprieve. Each of those songs bookending this one are the most intense things ever. Whereas this one, I'm like, yeah, I have some notes, but like not 8 episodes worth of notes.
I mean, not yet anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Not yet.
I also feel like, I don't know if we explicitly addressed this. I don't remember where this train of thought was going, but like, the title of this song is so straightforward, The Things I Say. I feel like it gets at exactly what the song's about more directly than other things.
Yeah, it also, so I do feel that. I also am confused by it, but I might be confused by it just because it seems so simple that I want to look more into it. And I'm like, oh, what does this mean on like a different level? But maybe there just is no different level, you know?
Does that make sense? There's probably a different level. But like, did we explicitly address the title in Waltz of the 101st Lightborn about like, I was just thinking about that this morning, like that... I know we talked about the waltz as a dance that is like a cyclical thing that brings the dancers back to the same spot. But did we explicitly address that if the 101st Lightborn are waltzing, like the circular nature in that, that this is something that repeats as well, that like their endeavor up or return is like in this endless repeat cycle? Did we say that? It's been a few weeks. I don't remember.
It's been a few weeks. I'm not sure, but I think it's a great point.
I think we probably did say it. I'm going to give us past credit.
Okay, cool. That. Past credit. Well, just as a reminder then, guys. There we go. But yeah, the things I say. And like, we don't ever get in this song, I don't really think, a glimpse into what she actually says, the content of what she actually says, which makes this song kind of mysterious in a way. Mm-hmm. She talks about her feelings towards the things that she says and like the fact that she regrets or like that she's ashamed of half of the things that she says.
Yeah, but that's true. But we don't know, this is what I said.
Yeah, which it makes it very... we're kept at a distance in a little bit of a... in some kind of sense, at least.
Mm-hmm. The ending of this song, like after 2 minutes, is one of my very favorite things on the album. It's like this haunting, backwards, deliberate echo that feels like we're being sucked into a wormhole or into a whirlpool or something like that.
Mm, I like that description. So,
someone on Genius said, and this is the only comment for the whole song on Genius, They said the song represents a kind of turning point. The flight trajectory shifts from going up to coming down. The lyrics here are all reverie, wistful, and reflective on the narrator's life so far. And I really like that perspective. I think sometimes we forget to like bounce back out to the whole album perspective, but we have been talking about a lot of upwards trajectory up until this point. And then the song after this is Divers.
Yeah, right. We'll be diving. So wait, is this person on Genius saying that we are starting the downward trajectory or that we are like hovering in the middle of the going up, being up, going down?
This is the whole comment here.
Okay.
The span of a single day is used on this album as a metaphor for the span of a lifetime. See the first song, Anecdotes, for example, which begins from the place beyond the dawn. The Things I Say is number 6 of 11 on the album, which is exactly halfway through. So this song represents a kind of turning point. The flight trajectory shifts from going up to coming down. So I think you could say either that we are like in the transitory phase or we are like, you know, our nose is tilting slightly.
Yeah, we're doing point. that shift forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. And I think you're exactly right, Sam, that we're not as good. We're not as good at doing the zoom out perspective, but that it's really helpful to do that. So when other people can point that out for us, we're very appreciative. And it seems right, right? Like it seems like in such a deliberate album with such intentional, like, trickery like that, that I think that it's not a coincidence that this song comes halfway through the album. Speaking of all the halves that we will get into. And yeah, that it would represent that same shift. I think on Genius too, I can't remember if it was on Genius or somewhere else, I saw someone make the point, the good point, I thought, that throughout the album, that a whole lifespan is often sort of represented in metaphor as a day. And we've talked about this, Sam, with other songs. And that if we are looking at the whole album as a day slash as one life cycle, that this is like we're at noon now. Like the sun is at its highest point, but right around the corner, it's starting to come down. Mirroring actually that like diving motion, that ascending and then diving motion.
I never made that connection too. That's really cool.
And the connection between the sun's like, motion?
Yeah, the sun's motion and our downward motion and Me the either. Album as a whole.
Me either, but I don't mind it.
I don't mind it at all.
Sorry, my fucking computer is going off and it's only going off with texts from my partner, David, who is... literally line by line so helpfully because we didn't have a chance to talk about this song before, which we normally do, but he's just texting me wonderful thoughts line by line being like, okay, so when she says, when you'd frame her moving within your hands, here's what I think. So this is all going to come up. You guys are going to get the benefit of these fucking annoying beeps in the background. I just turned all my sound off, I think.
But yay, David, welcome aboard this downward flight.
He's our fourth co-host. Lola's the third.
Yeah,
David's the fourth.
Lola's number one.
Okay.
As I was just like meandering through the internet with my Google searches, I went to her Bandcamp. And someone, just like looking at the reviews of her album on Bandcamp, someone called her music gourmet music. And I was like, that's a beautiful way to say that.
It and is.
You're right.
It gourmet.
It's an experience. Yeah. It's very special. It's delicious. It's all-encompassing.
Lush and extravagant.
Lush and extravagant. Exactly. Exactly.
5 Michelin stars, Joanna. I don't know if anyone has 5. You get 6.
Yeah, you get all of them.
Okay, so I have a couple notes here that I wrote forever ago when we first started Divers, just from interviews, and I just like sort of pasted like the different things that she said about different songs into different documents. So here's what I have on The Things I Say. So this is from an interview with her in The Stranger. And the question is, what are the considerations of construction for The Things I Say, which to me sounds like a melancholy Opry ditty? Okay, and she says, Even that one has a bit of a structural conceit. It's just zoomed out a lot more. So you have to wait a lot longer for the rhyme to hit, but it's still there. For that one, again, I can't really say why. All I can say is that the type of mood I wanted for that song and the type of thing I wanted to say with that song didn't suggest a highly formal lyrical structure to me. The song played a part in the larger role, though. The thing about this record is that not only did certain songs have very specific rules governing how the story was going to be told and how the lyrics needed to be arranged, but also the record itself had a superimposed structure that was very specific. And basically, from quite early in the process, not from the very beginning, but from the budding first leaves up, let's say, I was pretty clear on what the sequence of songs was going to have to be. And because of that, I did know where in the overall arc of the album the song, The Things I Say, was going to land. But that consideration was one of the things that governed the mood. The fact that it wasn't arranged densely at all, just solo piano and voice. And it affected the tone, the perspective of what that story is about, because of where it fell in the sequence. So I thought that was really interesting, because what she's saying there is that, like, its place in the album is the thing that informs the song. It's like, and normally I think it's the opposite. Like, what the song's about is normally what determines what place it goes in. But she's saying, no, it was the opposite. I needed this middle song to be at its core, like a middle song.
I think that's really interesting too, that not only does she have like this visual arc of the entire album, but that she knew, even if she hadn't written the songs yet, she knew exactly what each song's role would be and where they would fall on that arc. And I think that's really beautiful and important with that shape of the full day then too, right? Like, I want to visually represent this with like the sun's trajectory through the sky. Get back to me. I'm gonna spend some time on Canva. We will do this.
Ooh, I'm excited for this.
You have time off coming up. Let's waste our time doing.
I would be very grateful for that valuable spending of time. Dude, I was just listening to, so you know the, was it The Alarmist? I think it was The Alarmist that I was telling you about on our bonus episode. A podcast called The Alarmist. Go check it out. It's amazing. But I was listening to like the history of timekeeping. And now I don't know what they were trying to blame. Okay. Anyways, the format of the podcast is that they want to decide who is to blame for tragic historical events. But anyways, they were talking about timekeeping and why am I bringing this up now? I have no train of thought, you guys. Sorry, I'm leaving for California tomorrow and my brain is scattered in 25 different places. What is the thing you said right before I started talking about this?
We were talking about the sun's trajectory through the sky. You were talking about timekeeping.
The sun's trajectory through the sky, I think, is maybe where I was going. And so they were talking about the history of timekeeping devices, which Sam and I have gotten into on this podcast. Yes. Yeah. And obviously the sun is a huge catalyst in our ability to keep track of time, or like the thing, the very thing that enables it, through like sundials and stuff like that. But I also thought that it was really interesting that water too, I hadn't heard of these devices, but they were like water clocks, I guess. But the way that they would measure to the passing of time is because the rising and the lowering of the tides, or like the shifting of the water from one body of water to the other, they would like measure how much water had come into the thing. And by that, they could tell how much time had passed since, because it was so consistent and reliable. So I thought it was interesting that they used both water and the sky, like the sun, to track time, just sort of in keeping with like the importance of the difference between sky and like earth and land, although I guess sea isn't quite earth, but I don't know, it sounded relevant.
And then it makes me want to think of, I know we talked about like clocks and timekeeping as it related to time zones and waltz and like how ships kept time. But then that makes me want to connect it to Melissa Marjorano's classic idea of like women on land, men on the water, and like how those timekeeping scales references might be different too.
Yeah, totally. Because they were different. Like before there was no standardized way of keeping time. Like, and we talked about this before, but like people would just have different times. It would just be 7:15 in Boston and 8:26 in wherever else in mm-hmm. New York. No, that's not quite right, but whatever. You know what I'm saying.
Completely don't count us times. For an accurate timekeeping.
Yeah, that's we'll not talk what we're about here
it.
For.
We won't actually keep the time.
Yeah, and I thought it was really interesting too, just as a quick tangent, how when societies or like towns started to keep track of time, like sort of as a community together, that people were so resistant. Like there's a bunch of writing where people are like, this is fucking ridiculous. Before I used to know that it was lunchtime because my belly told me I was hungry. And now it's like, nope, you have to be hungry at this shadow time. Like when the shadow tells us that it's 1 o'clock, that's when you get hungry. Like people really hated the idea of being stuck to this coordinated system.
I mean, I agree with that very much with food. Because, like, who the fuck wants to eat lunch at 11 o'clock? It's too much.
But it's when your belly is hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry for that derailment, everybody. I will be better. Okay. So, the things I say. Should we just get right into it?
Let me open my notes here again.
Okay.
Yes, to my great, words are gone. To my great surprise, no. To good news, Michael Hicks does have an article for this.
Yes, good news.
I thought that he didn't for some reason, but thank goodness. So, if you're following along with those articles, Michael Hicks wrote one called To Maybe Get There Yet, Meaning in Mathematics and Joanna Newsom's The Things I Say. So I'm sure we'll be referencing that pretty consistently. I didn't look at Blessing All the Birds, though.
They have that conversation on it. Yeah, which right. I'm sure we'll reference to. And we'll link to both those articles in the show notes as usual.
Awesome. Yeah, the Blessing All the Birds ones is called Delving Into Divers, The Things I Say. I love these conversation posts too. I think
me
probably
too.
Because they remind me of how much I love the conversations you and I have. And like aww. How much. Well, because it helps with the processing of everything,
yeah.
right?
It really does, yeah. Reading it in this like sort of natural progression of thought is helpful to me at least. Okay. So, any other preliminary notes?
I don't think so. I really okay. like this song. I think that's it. I posted on Facebook this morning asking if anyone had thoughts. Our lovely friend Samir just commented, the last verse never fails to make me cry, and says also that they annotated on Genius. Oh, so there is more than one annotation. Thanks, Samir. When the sky goes pink in Paris, France. Those are Samir's thoughts. So beautiful.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I also posted on Facebook the ending of the song played in reverse. So go listen to that when we get there too.
Oh, you did post that on Facebook, Sam?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you so much for doing that. That's wonderful. Oh,
you're very welcome.
Okay.
Those are all my thoughts, though. That's it. Goodbye.
All right. So let's do this here. Yeah, I think – oh, my only other thought before we start, sorry, guys, is that if my memory is correct – and my memory is extraordinarily fallible, so I, like, leave it open – leave the possibility open that I'm wrong here. But if I'm right, I think this is one of the first songs to come out from Divers, like, before Divers itself came out. And by come out, I mean to have been played in concert and then for that concert recording to be put on YouTube.
Right.
Because I have a distinct memory of being delighted. I've only been to Europe once in my life. And I have this distinct memory of being in Paris and being so giddy about it and singing to my then partner when the sky goes pink in Paris, France, and being like, oh my God, I'm doing it. Like, this is Paris, France. I'm here.
The sky is pink. All the stars are aligned. This is all I need.
Yeah. So
that's very sweet.
I think that it's right that she played this sort of early in, I don't want to say early in the process because I don't know what the timeline of her process was, but it was performed as one of the first ones. This and Divers, I think, and I think maybe Leaving the City too. Anyways. Mm. Okay.
It's an interesting snapshot of the album, if it was those three.
Yeah, it's like beginning, middle, end. One from the beginning, one from the middle, one from the later half.
Yeah, that's definitely intentional.
Okay. So, Samantha, would you like to start us off with the first verse?
Sure. She sings, "If I have the space of half a day, I'm ashamed of half the things I say. I'm ashamed to have turned out this way, and I desire to make amends."
Okay. All right. We'll take it from there then. It strikes me as just right off the bat, it's just sad. It's more like, I mean, most of her music is sad, let's be clear, but like, this is just very straightforward. Like, we're dealing mm-hmm. with like a sort of a dejected person right now. She's feeling a little down.
Like, it's also so relatable.
It's very relatable.
Like, if I have the space, not only like the space as in time, but in also like the space in my brain to think about all of the things that I say. Yeah, I'm ashamed of most of it. I think that's like, and as someone with anxiety, that is like very much like a ruminating thing.
Oh God, it's so relatable.
Yeah.
Dude, I do this thing. This is like embarrassing to say on a podcast, but like it's nice because I'm just saying it to you and I don't have to think about everybody else who's listening. But like, I catch myself so frequently during the day just going about my activities, doing that exact same thing, just like replaying things that I'm embarrassed about. And like, for some reason, I can't help but out loud, I like cringe. Like, just if you were watching me, if you were a fly on the wall, I would just be like wiping the counter or whatever. And then all of a sudden I'd be like, oh, no. Or like, like that. Or just like, oh, like just out loud.
Yep. And there's also like a scale of rumination too, right? Like there's memories that I go back to that I will consistently cringe at the same level every time. And then there's new ones where you're just like, ooh, that wasn't great. But also like wasn't as bad as this one. Remember when 17 years ago this thing happened? Like that was the worst.
Oh, our brains are so just poor little brains. I have one that is from a party that I just attended where I didn't know what a person was talking about. And they like made like a little joke and I was just like, like, I don't know. And like the way I answered it, I was trying to play off like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. But then I got home and I understood his reference and I was like, oh my fucking God, it's so embarrassing that I just tried to play it off as though I knew what was going on because he for sure knew that I didn't. Like, whatever. We don't need the details of my humiliation here, but like, it was so, I'm consistently embarrassed about that now. It's fine. Whatever. I don't actually care, but like, I can't help but ruminate on it.
Yeah. And that's what our narrator is doing here. Yeah,
that's
right?
What our narrator is doing.
Like, and ashamed is such a specific word to use too. So I'm wondering if we're referencing the entire first part of the album. Like my brain is still very much in waltz because that's where we just were. But like, if I have the space, first of all, space, beautiful word choice since we just left waltz, right?
Yes.
Like we were just in space. We were just through space and time. So that's probably intentional.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed to have turned out this way and I desire to make amends. Like my first thought is like, are we referencing everything that happened in waltz? I think our big choice in waltz was time travel, right?
Like, yeah.
Is that what we're ashamed about? Is it that we're ashamed of the time travel? Is it that we're ashamed of having lost, like made that choice and lost our partner because of that? What else could it be?
I mean, all great questions. So one thing that pops into my brain now is that I seem to remember, although again, my memory is very fallible. I seem to remember Joanna describing these songs as sort of like one narrator passing the baton on to the next narrator. And so like while they're all circling around the same question, it's like not the same person or something. Okay. Don't quote me on that. That's like the thought that comes into my head, but I'm not sure. But like, yeah, I think it could apply to like that. You and I relate to this so hard. Like, I think it just communicates the sort of, yeah, relatable human experience that it is to fucking turn inward and be regretful so easily.
I put, this is off topic, but I put Birds on TV for my cat for the first time this week, and she is so into it.
She's just sitting there staring intently, like.
She's moved positions a few times. Oh, Lord.
Okay, so David's thought on this first verse here is, I like that the first line is, if I had the space of half a day, which is basically acknowledging that space and time are the same thing, like relativity says and all, which obviously we tried to talk about at least in our discussion on Waltz. Mm-hmm. So, and that's close to what you were saying too, Sam, is just pointing out the very intentional use of the word space here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess David's thought there is just like, because it's sort of a, not double entendre exactly, but like, because space here refers to time.
Mm-hmm.
If I had the space of yes. half a day.
Yeah.
Also, like, is the first line just saying like, all I need is half a day? Like, all I need is half a day to start getting to this mournful place. If you leave me alone with just my thoughts for half a day.
I think so. And it's a big if, right? Like, it's not,
yeah,
I consistently have the space of half a day. It's like, if I am granted the space, that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
If it happens that I have enough time in my day,
yeah,
I feel bad.
I feel bad. I start to regret.
Yeah.
That's only, interesting.
And not only I start to regret, but I desire to make amends.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I desire to, so I don't, like, necessarily take intentional steps to make amends with whatever I said, but I desire to. I wish I could. And I feel like it's the same thing that you and I ruminate about, right? Like, when we're replaying those situations over in our head, it's like, I would have said this, or I would have not laughed at that joke in that way, or I would have, you know... This would have been my retort instead.
Yeah. Like, for me, it's more like, but the specific regret is like, I just want to be more genuine to myself. I don't have to pretend to know what's going on. If I don't know what's going on, I can just say, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, yes. That's fine to say, like, I don't know what that reference is. Mm-hmm. Like, just be true to yourself instead of trying to put on airs, Nikki. Just got to do that. Yeah, but exactly that the desire to make amends makes it even more sort of gentle, I guess. It's not just regret. It's also this sort of tender vibe.
Tender, yes. It's a great word for that, yes. And it, you're right. It's not as harsh as like, fuck, I wish I could forget that, or I wish I could change that. It's just like,
aw. I just wish it were different.
Yeah.
I just looked up amends. Even though I thought that I knew what it meant, I just mm-hmm. in case there's any like nuance that we're missing. But it's what you'd think it would be, like to make right, to improve it. There's also like the very technical, to make minor changes in a text in order to make it fairer, more accurate, or more up to date. But I think she's probably just using it here in like the most natural way of understanding it. I just want to make it better. I want to make things better. Put them right.
Yeah, to, and I think my understanding of amends is like to apologize. Like, making amends is generally an apology, mm-hmm. in my brain at least.
So if she wants to make an apology, that's interesting, because then it seems like she did something wrong to someone, right? It's not mm-hmm. just that she's like, I wish I were different. I think she's saying like, like the way that I am affected other people in a negative yeah. way that I want to fix.
And the mistake that we've made here, I think, is that we fucked up the whole world with our time travel, right? Like we tried to fix something and we learned very quickly that it didn't work. And so I wish that I could go back and undo all of those choices, but I can't.
It's interesting that it's half the things. Like mm-hmm. she's like, I'm good with the other half, but...
So then I wonder if it's like, I don't apologize for my feelings. I don't apologize that like I wanted to do that and I wanted to change it. I just like, I feel bad about the way it turned out. Like, yeah. And I think that's a control thing too, right? We can't control the outcome of all of those, especially time traveling choices.
Yeah. And to say I'm ashamed to have turned out this way is such a sad, 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 like at first it sort of gives me the vibe that like she thinks that it's unchangeable. Like I turned mm-hmm. out the way that I am and like I'm just sort of upset about that. Like mm-hmm. it seems final, right? It seems like if you say I'm ashamed to have turned out this way, it seems like you're not still in the process of evolving and like getting yeah. better. And but then also just to be ashamed of like the way that you are is just, that's a fucking sad statement.
Well, and turned out is an interesting phrase too, because turned out can mean what you are saying and what my first read of it was, which is like ending up in a certain
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
So I bought all these ingredients to make a pie and it turned out horribly.
Like, yeah.
I burnt it. I forgot the butter. But it can also mean, oh, sorry, Zoom just did that thing again where it's like, do you want to use Zoom audio? No, I want to use the nice microphone. Get out of here. Turned out can also mean the way one is dressed, one's appearance. So if we read it that way, I'm ashamed to have like shown up in a specific way. I'm ashamed to have represented myself in a specific way. And I desire to make amends. Like, I wish I could apologize for that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting, too, if we think about it with the clothes lens, because throughout Joanna's work, we've seen clothes as representing, like, putting on a mask. Like, I yeah. think back to Monkey and Bear and
yes.
Ribbon and Bows. Ribbon Bows. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, it's like, I'm ashamed to have presented myself with this front, like, in this sort of contrived way.
Yeah, and it's exactly that, the masking of something. Yeah. I'm ashamed that, you know, I put on this face and I wish that I could have shown more of my true self.
Yeah.
Like you said, just admitted that I didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah. Okay. There's this interesting part in the Michael Hicks article on this, which again, I will link to the show notes, but I love his point here in comparing or making at least acknowledging that there might be some sort of Zena's paradox happening with the way that she puts it with all the halves. So, so let me just first read what I'm referring to. So the lyrics, if you pay attention to all the like halves, H-A-L-V-E-S. So there's the homophone in the very first line. If I have the space of half the day is the lyric, but you could hear that as if I have, if I yeah. cut in half, if I have the space H-A-L-V. Of half a day. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If I have the space of half a day, I'm ashamed of half the things I say. I'm ashamed to half turned out this way. That one's more of a stretch. But just to bring to mind all of these halvings, mm-hmm. Okay, so Michael Hicks writes, in his dichotomy paradox, Zeno wonders how you can ever get from point A to point B if you have to go halfway, then halfway, then halfway. So the thought is that, like, Zeno is worried that you can never get to your destination because all you have to do is keep going halfway. So, like, let's say I have to go a mile, then I just have to go half a mile. Okay. But then I just have to go half of that. And basically the thought is just that, like, you're never going to get there because you can keep cutting distance in half infinitely. And I think that that infinite part is really important for this album, because of its themes of infinity and endlessness and cycles. And it sort of brings to mind that, like, you know, when you, like, look at yourself in a mirror in a bathroom mall and there's a mirror behind you too, and you just, like, see yourself gone for forever. That is kind of what we have here in this, like, infinite endlessness. Does that make sense? Did I not do a good job explaining Zeno's paradox?
No, you did. Yeah. That it's you're constantly having the distance, cutting in half the distance that you need to travel. And that makes the trip so much more arduous because you're only ever going half of what you intended.
Yeah. And that it's impossible to ever get there. So you can never get to the destination that you want to get to because... let me just read someone else describe it because it's a bit.
In the link that Michael Hicks included in the article, the dichotomy paradox says, before an object can travel a given distance, we're naming the distance D, it must travel a distance of D divided by 2. But in order to travel D divided by 2, it must travel D divided by 4, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the number you're dividing the distance by gets increasingly higher and higher.
Yes.
And since the sequence goes on forever, it therefore appears that the distance D cannot be traveled.
Yes. That's a great way of putting it. Perfect. Does that make sense?
The infinite number of half steps needed is balanced by the increasingly short amount of time needed to traverse the distances. So it's just like, even though you're saying I'm traveling a shorter distance, it's increasingly getting longer and longer and longer.
Is that right? Say that again?
Because you're constantly cutting in half the distance that you need to travel, it's just making it that much longer.
Yeah, because it's like... I think so, because it just keeps shortening the distance that you have to travel, but you have to keep traveling an infinite amount of shorter distances.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know why the vision in my mind is like cutting up dough, like rolling out a really long piece of dough and then like cutting it into teeny tiny pieces. That
totally works. And so the thought that you can never get anywhere from point A to point B, I think is really fitting in keeping with this album, just because of the existentialism, right? Like, we're not going anywhere, even though, like, we're moving, we're not making any progress towards anything, which I think is a beautiful way of doing that. Putting mathematics and conceptual math and Zeno's paradox in there to make this, like, existential point. Fucking yes, Joanna. Good job.
Yeah. Yeah, I found this Michael Hicks article super enlightening and really cool to read, but also one of the trickiest ones to understand.
There's a lot going on in that article.
There's a lot going on, and I feel like usually with his articles, I'm thinking specifically of Sapochnikov. You can kind of skim through it and you can get the greater idea. This one, there's no skimming. Like, you need to take some time. You need to really understand what's happening before you move on to the next.
That's true.
Next idea.
Yeah. okay. So that is that. Is that it for the first verse?
I think so. I think the only other thing I had was that, like, ashamed. Did we talk about the meaning of ashamed? Mm-mm. Just like feeling shame or guilt, feeling inferior, inadequate, or embarrassed, or feeling reluctant through fear or humiliation or shame. I thought that fear was an interesting one there too.
Yeah.
Only because I'm like, what are we scared of? What has it been like?
I feel a fear here, though. I can get behind that definition of ashamed, or like that component, I guess I should say, of ashamed, because there is this fear of like, what am I going to do now? Or like this existential fear, I guess, of like, I am unhappy with a lot of the stuff in my life. I want to make amends, but it interestingly leaves it ambiguous as to like whether she's going to make amends, whether she can make amends, whether it's possible, like what it, like maybe on purpose doesn't give us a way forward. Like we're very stuck. And that also is in keeping with Zeno's paradox, right? Like there is no way forward. She's not saying, I'm going to make amends, I'm going to make things right with you. She's just saying, I want this. But that's a very static statement. It is not like an actionable thing or like a plan or an intention or anything. Yeah. It's very still. And so I think maybe you could, there's some sort of like fear that is like paralyzing our narrator from moving forward. Maybe dread, maybe existential dread.
Yeah, and maybe just like, you know, faced with the reality that you can't go back in time and change things, right? That like anxiety and that feeling stuck, exactly that existential dread that even if I want to change this, I can't.
Yeah, and actually now that you say that, totally, that feeling stuck in regards to like, especially for contrasting, even if this narrator hasn't herself time traveled because like perhaps she's a different narrator, the concept of time travel is still relevant here, or might still be relevant here, because if we're talking about regrets, what is that other than being bound to where we are in time, right? And not able to go back and do it. Like it is very much this, time is very much in mind or like at the forefront of the concept of regret itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
Okay. But, and yeah, I know I said this before too, but I just, it's so interesting to me that the song is called The Things I Say and that she's ashamed of half the things she say, but we never find out what the content of those things is.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think I have anything beyond that to say about that, but I just wanted to emphasize it again, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to read the next verse?
Sure. It's another dejected one. So she says, but it don't make no difference now, and no one's listening anyhow. And lists of sins and solemn vows don't make you any friends. Shit, man.
Yeah.
That's sad. Straightforwardly sad. Not sad in this like sort of more like ornate and lush way that we're used to. We've used that word already in this podcast, but very straightforwardly like, oh man, you're going through some stuff.
You're going through some stuff, and exactly what you said, right? That there's this like higher level, I don't know what I was going to say, but that like it's just true on the base level. Like if you were to approach people hoping to be friends, listing your sins and solemnly vowing to, I don't know, to be true to them, to be a good friend, whatever, is not necessarily going to bring them over to your side, is not going to necessarily encourage that friendship.
Yeah. So like, I'm wondering what way to interpret that line in particular, that her statement that lists of sins and solemn vows don't make you any friends. So on the one hand, I was thinking that like, maybe she means that like going up to someone and saying like, here's how I've sinned and here's how I swear I'll do better next time. That doesn't make you any friends because like people don't believe you or like people want to see you actually act on those vows. Or if it's rather like, man, I'm fucking stuck ruminating about all my regrets and all the things I wish I hadn't done and all the things I wish I can do better. And like, I'm stuck in this space. And like, that's no fun. That's like not a way to make friends. People don't want to be around that.
Yeah, and people also don't want you. It's like one of those social constructs. You can't be so honest with people.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
Like you can't just walk up and list, okay, these are all the ways that I'm shitty.
Yeah.
And expect them to want to be your friend.
Yeah.
Which is hard because I think for a lot of people, laying out those expectations makes it a lot easier, right?
Yeah.
These are my shortcomings and here's how I'm addressing them is a really honest way to approach a friendship. But
I feel like I would really appreciate that. If a stranger came up to me and said, here's all the bad parts about me, sincerely, like here, like ugly parts that like I am not proud of and I'm still struggling with. Mm-hmm. Even if they didn't have like an action plan to make it better, they just said like, here's the shitty parts about me. I feel like I'd be into it. I'd be like, wow, that's better than small talk.
Oh, better than small talk, 100%. I feel like I would appreciate that with someone you've known for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you've noticed those things in yourself. You're letting me know. Like, that's an incredible level of self-reflection. But to, like, introduce yourself to someone in that way, I think is only because I'm, like, not amazing at making friends. And, like, you know, I feel like it's – you're selling yourself. Right?
Yeah.
Like you have to, exactly what the small talk is. You have to be like this surface level whatever and approaching it with, you know, all of your shittiest qualities won't make you any friends.
No, it won't. It won't at all. Except for me, maybe.
Yeah, that's great. I got you. We're all good.
Did you take it to be that second interpretation that I said? Like that you're being too dark, like you're not selling yourself well enough and that's why it won't make you any friends?
I think I take it as, and this might change, like I've spent so much time ruminating on these things and like I wish that I could express that somehow, but I'm not able to because that won't help me move forward.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That totally makes sense. Like in this, yeah. I can't move forward. This is not really doing anyone any good.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and that goes along with like the, it don't make no difference now and no one's listening anyhow. So like, it don't make no difference because like the time has passed, like it happened. So it doesn't make any difference that I'm ruminating about it. I can't change it. And no one's listening because it's just my thinking to myself, maybe. Or maybe yeah. No one's listening because people left her.
That's sad.
It is sad, but we're in sad territory. I don't know.
We are also in like very religious territory here, referencing sin and solemn vows. So I just looked up because this isn't something I keep in my brain, like the seven deadly sins. So we have pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, wrath, and sloth. And if we're, I don't know. I was just trying to ruminate on like what is it pride that we're talking about? Were we so confident in our decisions that like, and again, I'm just in a very Waltz headspace, like we could go back in time and change things or we could move forward in time and make things better. And we were so, so prideful and so greedy in those decisions. Like, is that our sin? Are those our sins?
These are good questions, Sam. I also always have like a bit of a like flag go up about decadence and like gluttony with mm-hmm. Joanna albums, just because I feel like that's been themes across albums.
Mm-hmm.
And so gluttony was one of the sins you listed, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I wonder if that too, and even just like if we are thinking of waltz-like themes, just like we were talking about like the greed of like wanting to fucking colonize everything or like
exactly.
On a personal yeah. level, it could just be like the not appreciating what you have and like hurting people because of it, you know?
Or the lust that
yeah.
Like, I need to be with this person so badly that I'm willing to sacrifice everything.
Totally. Yes, absolutely. Oh, man.
Solemn vows I had to look up too, because I was like, okay, I know what solemn vows in a casual sense means, but in a religious sense, in a Catholic sense, a solemn vow is a certain vow, a deliberate and free promise made to God about a possible and better good taken by an individual or after novititate in a Catholic religious institute. So we have solemn vows and we have simple vows. It is a simple vow if the church has not granted it recognition as a solemn vow. But I think the way I understand it is that, like, it's a public vow. A solemn vow is like a promise that you make to God and to the church. So it's something that, like, a priest or an archbishop or a nun or something would make. The example they use on Wikipedia is, like, if you are joining the priesthood or the nunnery, you would say, like, I promise never to be married. I promise to connect myself to God. And that's something that can never be broken.
So, like, to vow on your wedding day, for instance, would not be a solemn vow because it's not like a church member. You're not like vowing. You're not a member of the church vowing to the church.
That's a good question. That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think it would depend. I feel like that would be a public.
Yeah.
Vow.
When I think of the word solemn, I think solemnly swear, but that's a different than to solemnly. That's a different thing than to solemnly vow.
Yeah, I think that solemn vows, oh, here we go. And so Merriam-Webster, saving the day. an absolute and irrevocable public vow taken by a religious, so a religious person in the Roman Catholic Church under which ownership of property by the individual is prohibited and marriage isn't valid under canon law. So by this definition, a solemn vow is only something, like, it's only your dedication to the church.
Gotcha.
So okay. I don't think a marriage would qualify.
Gotcha. Okay. Right. Yeah. So I just looked up the, yeah. Okay. I looked up the novitiate. How did you say that? Novitiate?
I don't know. I made it up.
The word that you used. Okay, taken by an individual during or after a novitiate in a religious Catholic institute. So I just looked that up just to see what it was. And it's just that. It's the purity of training and preparation that a Christian person or a member of a religious order undergoes prior to taking vows in order to discern whether they are called to vowed religious life. So yeah, I guess a list of sins and solemn vows would not make you any friends because... So is the thought that, like... And, like, were I to dedicate my life to just being as good as I, like, could possibly be, like, that doesn't seem like the right way to go either because that won't make you any friends, and friends are good things.
Yeah, and I feel like it's addressing, like, a dedication to something that isn't necessarily beneficial to you. This also might be, like, my perspective of religion, but if you're taking a solemn vow, you are not dedicating yourself necessarily to the betterment of the world and the betterment of people in general. You're dedicating yourself to the church and whatever the church has decided is valuable. And that may come along with some amazing positives, but it also may come along with, like, whatever the church is prescribing at the time.
Yeah, totally. Another interpretation is that she might not be referring to, like, the term solemn vow as, like, maybe she's just describing a certain vow that she has taken as being a solemn one, like, in the, like, serious sense or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, this is a very serious vow, but I think it's probably, given that it is a phrase solemn vow. She's probably referring
to maybe it's both. Coupled with sins. Yeah. I feel like we're scooping that up together and tying it with a ribbon, but I could be wrong. But again, solemn by itself just means like serious, dignified, earnest.
Mm. So then if I love your thought here that like this is presented to us in this couple, sins and solemn vows, which like makes it feel really religious, which I didn't get before we started talking. But now with that framing in mind, then the no one's listening anyhow line strikes me a bit different. Is she having an existential crisis about God not being there?
Yeah. I love that.
No one's listening. Yeah, I like that too.
Even if we were to make solemn vows and list our sins, who are we? Who are we making those lists for?
Right.
There is no God. Like,
it don't make no difference.
Yeah.
And if the genius, yeah, sorry, I was going to say if the genius interpretation is right, that this like marks the beginning of the fall downward, then maybe we're having like the fall from Eden or something, but that might be a stretch.
Let's bring that back in. That's great. That's so much fun to talk about.
I mean, in the last song, she was walking in the garden, so who knows? The Garden of Shavuot.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead though.
The first line is also, it don't make no difference now.
Yeah.
So maybe it did before and maybe it will in the future. But right now, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Now,
and
I wonder.
Might be time. It might be place. It might be who knows, right? It might just be where my brain is at right now.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that. No one's listening, Nikki. That's great. I'm going to ride that high all day. That's cool.
And no one's listening. Yeah, it changes the tone of it a bit in a way that I like, because we like a dark turn.
Sure do.
I'm just gonna check to see if David has any thoughts on this specific line in his little mini essay through text that he wrote me. I hope that he does. Nope. The next brilliant point that he has comes for the frame for moving in your hands line. So not yet. But it's coming, guys. Okay. Hang in there. I know you want to hear
in
from
there
David.
For thoughts from David. A mini segment.
A mini segment. Totally. All right. So that is all I have for that line, I believe.
Me too. I feel good about that, though. Good job.
Yeah, me too. Okay. Yeah, it's like the last verse that we did in Waltz or whatever verse it was when there was the fucking stack of slides debriding. Like, I felt bad about that verse all day because like we did it, and I'm like,
Nikki,
I'm more confused now. I know, it's dumb. It's another one of those ruminating things where I shouldn't be ruminating on that because like we did our best. It's fine. Moving on. But I'm like, fuck, I want to have made more sense of that than I did. This is the opposite though. So it feels good.
Yeah. Okay, great. Check. Next. Very satisfying.
Okay, I will let you go ahead and read the next one then.
Okay, let me open my window again here.
This is a short song.
It is a short song. Yeah, what's our total length here? We should probably start with facts like that, huh?
Yeah, probably. Probably should. I don't know how long it is. The intro to Genius, which we also should have read maybe at the beginning, says, one of the shortest and most straightforward songs on the album. The Things I Say is melodically and structurally simple, with Joanna Newsom focusing on succinct imagism and economy of lyricism over the far-flung allusions that dominate much of her work, this album in particular. However, belying this simple exterior, which betrays an innocence, is a host of meaning moving towards the climax of backwards guitar and singing, which says, make you any friends, somewhere far away. The fact that this is backwards could link to the song's theme of miscommunication, as the listener has to play the song backwards to get the message, or, metafictionally, it could be a comment on the depths of meanings the thing she says, of the thing she says, and the words in general contain beneath the surface that the listener or reader may uncover. It may also link to the theme of time on the album, something which in Waltz has been established as non-linear. It can move backwards. Interesting. That does not answer how long. How long this song is. Sorry about that.
Sorry. No. It was 2 minutes, 33 seconds. 2 minutes.
2 minutes, 33 seconds.
35 seconds.
Oh, okay. Very short. Thank you guys so much for listening to this part one of the things I say. I was going to say waltz because it's been the case for the last fucking 8 episodes.
We have moved on, but not really.
Yeah, exactly. Not really. We have a Patreon you guys should check out. There you can find early episode releases and 20 motherfucking bonus episodes, which is
20.
To me, it's a feat. So you can check that out. Yeah, you can check that out on Patreon. It's linked in the show notes. We also have an email. You can email us at ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com. Sam does an excellent stand-up, bang-up, beautiful, just happening, bitchin' job of running our Instagram, which is...
Nikki. A Hopeless Endeavor podcast. You're welcome to send us DMs there. You can like stuff. You can follow our link tree in our bio to intro, outro beats, to our Facebook group, which is A Hopeless
Endeavor. Joanna News. Hopeless Endeavor, Joanna News podcast. It's the end of the year. We're done. We're so done. All right. So thank you guys so much. We'll be back next week with part two. And we love you. And goodbye.
Goodbye.